Chris Brankert on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Ohio House. I would like to reserve, if I may, 5 minutes for rebuttal, and may it please the court. I'd like to begin today by directly answering the two questions the panel posed to the litigants. I would then like to talk about how, in examining the record regarding the defense of benefit, the affirmative defense of benefit in response to facially discriminatory provisions, was strictly a matter of statutory construction for the judge to decide. And with time permitting, I would like to go ahead and end by touching on the position of the state of California regarding the application of FEHA to the facts in this record. Let me begin by answering the first question directly. Prior to the enactment of the challenge ordinances, sober living homes were previously defined as residential service facilities or boarding houses. Sober living houses or homes, as they're currently defined, have never been defined either under the text of the code or by the city itself prior to this litigation as boarding houses. The very first time the city made any indication that sober living homes or group homes could be boarding houses was when in the district court judge changed position between his finding that there was no facial discrimination to where he found that there was facial discrimination. Upon finding that there was facial discrimination, the city changed its defense, and that is that group homes can be boarding houses. You'll find that shift in the district court decisions in the record at 3802, and contrast it with 3786.
I guess I'm not sure what the answer to the question is then. Before the regulations specifically defined sober living homes, what were the facilities that now qualify as that? What were they categorized as?
Between 2000 and January 3rd, 2014, sober living homes were either classified as single housekeeping units or residential service facilities. And that's based upon the definitions that you find codified in the code at the time in the zoning code section 13-6. You will have a codification of it as it existed at the time in the excerpts of record as exhibit 835. It also begins at page 6338. At that point in time, residential service facilities were defined as a residential service facility other than a licensed facility, boarding house, or single housekeeping unit. A residential service facility is other than a licensed facility, a boarding house, or a single housekeeping unit where the operator provides to residents personal services in addition to housing. At the same time, during this period, 2000 to January of 2014, boarding house was defined as a dwelling which is designed or used to accommodate guests, where guest rooms are provided in exchange for an agreed payment. And single housekeeping unit was defined as a functional equivalent of a traditional family. Members are non-transient. They jointly occupy the dwelling, and they share the common areas and the household activities. This understanding that they were either single housekeeping units or residential service facilities is confirmed also by the land use matrix at the time. You'll find that in section zoning code 1330, and it appears in the excerpts of record at 2136. Looking at just the plain meaning of these definitions, it's clear that a sober living home, as it currently exists now, was not a boarding house. It does not rent to guests. It's not designed to provide guest rooms. It is within the definition of a residential service facility because, as was defined back then, it provides a supportive environment. And finally, like a single housekeeping unit, it functions as a household, sharing in duties as well as the expenses. This classification that it was either a single housekeeping unit or a residential services facility is confirmed in the record by the adoption of Ordinance 1305. 1305 is effective as of January 4, 2014. What 1305 did was one thing. It narrowed the definition of single housekeeping unit for the purpose of excluding residential service facilities from that definition. You'll find the definition, you'll find that in the excerpt of record at 5609. The city confirmed that their understanding was after the narrowing of the definition of single housekeeping unit that sober living homes prior to 1305, were residential service facilities when it unanimously adopts January 24, 2014, 3 weeks after the narrowing of a single housekeeping unit, it adopts its housing element. In that housing element, you'll find in the record at page 5967 the following statement, the housing element, of course, describing the different types of housing that they have in the city. It says, residential service facility. The Costa Mesa Municipal Code defines residential services facilities as a residential facility other than a residential care facility, those are licensed, boarding house, or a single housekeeping unit, where the operator provides to the residents personal services in addition to housing. Continuing with the quotation, an example of this type of facility is a sober living program. The second period to look at...
This all boils down to, there's an argument about, can a facility only be within one of the categories that are defined in the ordinances, or could it possibly come within multiple categories?
Given
your argument is just one, right?
Absolutely, in terms of what it was.
What tells us that?
And then I think that then goes to the second question that was posed by the court. In the second question, can they decide? And clearly, I think in answer to that second question, the answer is no. As a matter of law, the text and the rules of statutory construction, as they existed after these ordinances were adopted, bars picking and choosing. Starting with the definitions themselves, you'll find those definitions codified in section.
And I think we're familiar with we've reviewed the record and are familiar with the definitions. The reasoning question for me is, you have a definition that is more generic, more general, and then you have one that is more specific, and a facility meets both the specific and the general definitions. Why can't that facility be in both categories?
For three reasons, Your Honor. First, it would be inconsistent with the plain ordinary meaning of the text of the words used. Each of these uses is defined with very specific, unique criteria. For example, a boarding house is defined as, based upon the nature of the rental agreement, the absence of the owner, and a cap put on rooms. A group home is defined with very specific affirmative requirements. It must be a supportive housing environment, and it must be housing specifically people who are considered disabled.
That's an argument based on the sort of specific governs the general canon. There's nothing textually that says an entity cannot come under two categories.
It is true, Your Honor, that the textual canon that clearly the specific would govern. But I would add this, Your Honor. To conflate these uses together would be to render superfluous the very unique and specific requirements of what constitutes a group home or a sober living home. To be a group home or a sober living home, one must be providing a supportive environment. One must be housing people that are considered disabled. And in order to conflate them together, Your Honor, you necessarily have to add text. Now, you have to add text such as a boarding house includes a sober living home and a group home. Clearly, that was not done in this. The city knows how to do that. For example, if you look at the definition of sober living home, it says a sober living home means a group home. It doesn't say anywhere, and it would be incumbent, the court would have to go ahead and read, a boarding house means a sober living home and a group home. Here's another significant point, I think, Your Honor. Within a very short period of time, in adopting 1413, which applied regulations for the first time to the R1, and then in 1511, applying it to the multifamily, the ordinance or regulations that are at issue here, in both times, the city amends the boarding house definition. Now, neither time do they impose an occupancy cap. They're still talking about rooms. And neither time do they take on what is being suggested by the city now, to go ahead and revise the definition to say a boarding house includes group homes or sober living homes. And they had it straightened before them while they were doing it. At the same time, they did link together. A sober living home means a group home. And so not only does the text can't be reconciled together, but as you pointed out, the canon of the specific over the general, but also adding, called upon to add text that clearly the legislature considered or had an opportunity to when it amended the definition in the context of these regulations.
Well, isn't your argument also asking us to add text to basically say that these categories are exclusive when the legislative body didn't say that?
But in fact, they did, Your Honor. If we broaden out our look at the regulation and we recognize that the code defines the word shall to mean mandatory, and we apply it to these definitions, to the regulations themselves, starting with the regulation here, Zoning Chapter 16, it provides, and this is in the addendum at page 147, Section 13.322, a permit shall be required and may be granted to permit operation of a group home. Shall is mandatory. When you look at the very next section, 13.323, a conditional use permit shall be required for and may be granted to allow the operation of a group home. The very same thing appears, Your Honor, and I'm looking now at the operator's permit that's required of group homes that are subject to section 323, and I'm at the addendum at page 149, 151, and 152. Looking at that, section 9-371, it says all group homes subject to this article shall comply with the requirements of the zoning code, chapter 16. It also goes on to say, in addition, these are quotes, in addition to the regulations outlined above, the following shall also apply to sober living homes. And finally, it ends at section 9-378, a group home that is subject to these provisions shall, shall have 120 days to comply with the provisions of this article. It is also...
We shift gears for a minute. I mean, I think we've been talking mostly about the facial challenge. That seems to be the lead argument that your clients have in this case. If we disagree with your facial challenge argument, we have to reach the reasonable accommodation claim. And I'd like to talk about that briefly before your time runs out. Why, I mean, the accommodation that is asked for here is basically don't apply your zoning regulations, city. Why is that a legitimate accommodation request?
It is not, Your Honor. In fact, the district court itself found that it came down to only one issue, and that was fundamental alteration as to whether or not an exception, you'll find that in the order of the district court, in the excerpts of record, I believe at pages 7 and 9. What the district court said is came down to a fundamental alteration, whether an exception would be made to the 650-foot separation requirement. Recall that that is retroactively imposed upon group homes. They can change anything to get it to qualify with permit requirements. They can't change their geography. Recall also that as a result of that, of the 26 existing homes that are subject to this regulation, only two are granted use permits. Of the 21 that apply for a exception to the separation of 650 feet, all of them are denied. And they're all denied because the city admits that it had quite the opposite of a reasonable accommodation. It said, we will make no exceptions to the 650-foot separation requirement. Now, that runs...
Well, so what, I mean, what's the... If a city... I guess... I'm going to ask you to accept a couple of points for purposes of my question. If the city has a valid reason for some zoning requirements that it imposes, and the requested accommodation is don't impose these requirements, what is the authority that says that a city has to basically, you know, waive requirements that it has enacted for a valid reason in order to meet the accommodation request? What's the legal authority that says a city has to do that?
The legal authority, of course, is found in the state's discussion of its regulation and statute under FEHA, but it's also found in...
I know the statutes talk about you must engage in reasonable accommodations. What I'm asking for is what's the legal authority to say that it is required for cities to give up their zoning requirements as a reasonable accommodation?
Well, I actually would turn to the statute itself, Your Honor, that was adopted by the city. The city in both the ordinance 1511 and it appears, of course, codified in the operator's permit, says specifically that it is not fundamental to request an extension, exception to these requirements. It specifically says if you want to make a request for an exception, make a reasonable accommodation. So it's built right in there. Second thing I would say is this is not a situation. It's built right into the regulation saying you can request a reasonable accommodation. If it's built into the regulation itself imposing the rule, then certainly it would not be anticipated as fundamental by the city. You'll find that in the text of the of both the operator's permit and also the zoning permit.
Well, my reading of the regulation about reasonable accommodation does specifically ask the authority who's going to receive those requests and decide them whether the request undermines the zoning program.
Right.
And if it does, then that's a factor weighing against granting the accommodation.
Three responses to that, Your Honor. First of all, as I mentioned, the statute itself that's at issue here anticipates that these requests are made. Second thing is, we are not requesting that there be, for purposes of this case, no separation at all. All we're requesting is that it's not a fundamental alteration, and there's no basis to find it to be a fundamental alteration between the 550 feet versus the 650 feet. In fact, there is no connection between these two. They are blocks apart. The only person to testify about this claim of institutionalization, which is nowhere defined, the only person to testify was the city's expert. She said, it's not institutionalized. There's no connection between the two of them. Moreover, the notion that there's a proximity between two households of disabled people would generate institutionalization is based on stereotypes and based upon without any evidence. Certainly no evidence is offered by the city here.
You're eating into the time that you wanted to say for rebuttal.
I do want to point out just two things. First, in looking at the summary judgment order, and also as it's reflected in the judgment as a matter of law order, all of the disputed issues or evidence that's listed by the court are, in fact, questions of statutory construction, in which the only evidence that's put forward by the city is statements by the newly hired community development director saying, this is what our ordinance says. It doesn't. This is what our ordinance says. I think you'll find that, as I said, in both of those. The second thing I would like to point out is about the California position. California provides its advisement as to how FEHA would be applied. And it says on this record that as a matter of law, there is no benefit that would justify the facially discriminatory regulation. It also goes on to talk about the reasonable accommodation and that it is not a fundamental alteration. In fact, reasonable accommodation anticipates that exceptions will be made to things such as density or separation requirements. Because these are issues that are applying the regulations for the first time, if for some reason the court believes that those positions stated by the state of California are not supported by their reading of the statute, then I would propose that those questions be certified to the California Supreme Court. And, of course, there's the procedure for this court to do it as it has in the past under the California Rules of Court 8.548. Thank you.
Christine Sangaila from the Complex Appellate Litigation Group on behalf of the City of Costa Mesa, the appellee in this case. This case is about local land use and the city's reasonable steps to reduce overconcentration in residential zones. It's not about discrimination. And it's not about whether the disabled are welcome in Costa Mesa. They are. Instead, this case is really about whether the city or enterprises like Ohio House have the ultimate power to make zoning decisions, in particular about whether sober living homes, which are special accommodations for the disabled, which the city has expressly allowed in residential zones, have the unbridled right to cluster in a single block. And I wanted to turn to the facial discrimination claim first, in large part that's an important threshold issue, but also I think that's where the court's pre-argument questions were going to as well. And I'll go into more detail after this, but our view, the city's view that's been stated consistently throughout the record, is that dwellings serving the non-disabled can use only the boarding house category, while dwellings that serve the disabled can use either. And so I want to walk through first the two questions that the court had. Question one about the previous, pre-2014, which was, okay, are sober living homes residential service facilities or boarding houses under that regime? And the answer actually is it's not one or the other. It's both. It could be either. And I want to walk through the definition a little bit. A boarding house is defined by guest rooms provided in exchange for an agreed payment of fixed amount of money or other compensation. So that's what sober living homes do. They're paid for that. Residential service facility talks about personal services in addition to housing, and that is sort of boarding house plus in that regard. And the record shows that the city would allow a sober living home to obtain a permit as either a residential service facility or a boarding house. And as my friend on the other side of the aisle pointed out, that yes, previously the city had noted that in their housing element report that an example of a residential service facility could be a sober living home, but also at testimony, at trial, there was testimony that Ohio House had always met the city's definition of boarding house at 22 ER 4939, and that sober living homes were also operating as non-permitted boarding houses through 2014. That's at 21 ER 4692. And so we have a different answer, I think, than my friend on the other side of the aisle, but I do believe that our view and how we actually apply it is very important to a facial discrimination claim. I would also note that pre-2014, there was a large boarding house was defined to include a sorority or fraternity as well. So there does seem to be some potential overlap and flexibility between the boarding house and residential service facility definitions.
So one thing that puzzles me about this case is that my understanding of the record is that there are no boarding houses in the city. Is that true?
That's not true. The testimony at trial from Jennifer Lee indicated that there are boarding houses, and that there are also sober living homes that existed and were permitted and licensed prior to 2014, and they have been, for better sense of the word, grandfathered in and allowed to operate as a in their continued state through the new ordinances. So there are boarding houses, and there are
three 2014. There are boarding houses, because I thought I read the opposite.
That's a good question. It's in Jennifer Lee's testimony, where she indicated that there were boarding houses, but I don't have that particular site right now. But she did say that in her at trial.
So, I mean, one of the key arguments, it seems to me, in resolving this case is whether it's true that the facilities like Ohio House can be in more than one category or not, because that's sort of a key thing that you rely on to show that there's benefit being provided. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, yes, it could go. It does go to two aspects of the facial discrimination claim. First of all, as the 11th Circuit indicated in Sailboat, that just the question of whether there is, basically, you could stop before you get to benefit if you were to conclude that, hey, there cannot be discrimination under this circumstance where you have these various options, and that the
point being that the homes that serve the disabled aren't being treated less favorably.
Correct. Exactly.
So what in the...
So that's sort of short of that.
Obviously, you know the opposing part, but we have to wrestle with that interpretive question of why, I mean, there's some logic to the counter-argument that why would we allow an entity to just jump categories when there is a specific and a general, and the specific covers them, why wouldn't that just be the category that they're in?
Yeah, well, the definitions themselves could encompass, both encompass sober living homes, and also they're not, it's not mutually exclusive within the code between boarding houses.
Is there any regulatory history that shows us that the city has allowed entities to jump back and forth between the categories?
Well, there is, let's see, Ohio House itself has a six-unit home in the city that's licensed. It is licensed as a sober living home. There are other entities that are out of the city's purview and are state-licensed service facilities as well for drug treatment. But I think that
I guess that doesn't answer the question. That shows me that these facilities are being categorized in the more specific category, which makes perfect sense. But if you don't have any regulatory history that you can show that, say, facilities like what is at issue here have been more broadly categorized as boarding houses and have been subject to the rules for that category as opposed to the more specific category.
Well, other than the statements and testimony of Jennifer Lee at trial, who indicated, yes, they could constitute treated as boarding houses under the boarding house regulations, and if a sober living home wanted to submit for that, they could do so. Now, there are limitations between the boarding house and the sober living homes, which might explain why some people might not choose to do that or choose to apply under that, because there are, in fact, a lot of benefits to the particular ordinance for sober living homes.
Your friend across the aisle says, well, that may be true, but that happened in litigation, and that seems a little convenient, that to now say you can jump categories as a litigation position. So that's why I'm asking, do you have any sort of history outside of this litigation that shows that's been allowed and the city has thought that was permissible?
Well, I have the testimony and the statements of Jennifer Lee from the city, who testified about the history, about how they were treated historically. And that's what I mentioned in terms of they were prior, yes.
Could you provide the specific sites to Ms. Lee's testimony in the 28-J letter?
I will.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, so the second part of the facial discrimination analysis goes to benefit, as you mentioned, to Your Honor. So we believe that the jury's determination on facial discrimination should be affirmed on just that threshold question under Sailboat, in terms of do they get some, are they really treated differently at all or worse? And then the second part, of course, is benefit. And the zoning code provides more options in the multifamily arena for the disabled than for other multiple rental home categories.
I think it makes sense that to conclude that the facilities serving the disabled have more options in the single family home zone because they're allowed to operate, and other categories are just not categorically mm-hmm. allowed to operate. In the multifamily zone, what is the benefit that they have?
Well, the benefit they have is in terms of the number of people that they can have. There's, in terms of limitations on the occupancy in the rented rooms, the boarding houses say now six people total in the house. Before, it had to do with six rooms. So they can have more people.
So the facilities serving the disabled can have more than six.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. And there's a smaller separation requirement for the sober living homes than for the boarding houses, 650 versus 1,000.
And then there is an additional permitting requirement that only applies to the sober living homes.
Yes, there are other things, but those plaintiff's counsel made clear at the jury trial that what they were contesting here is the 650-foot requirement. That is what they put to the jury, and that is what they challenged.
In a facial challenge, don't we have to look at all of the benefits and burdens that may or may not apply?
apply? Yes, you look at the overarching, is it overarching benefit or not? That is true. Yeah. Can you discuss the reasonable accommodation claim? And
sure.
You understand why Ohio House is asking for that, right? Because with these new changes to the regulatory structure, they're just out, right? And as the city is trying to do here, saying shut down operations, you don't get to operate anymore because you can't comply with this space requirement. So, of course, they're asking for a variance on that. Why is that something that the city can't do?
Yeah, so the jury agreed with the city on this point that the separation requirement was essential to prevent the institutionalization of residential neighborhoods and other adverse factors to the neighborhood itself and the residents. And the jury was instructed an accommodation is not reasonable if it would have required a fundamental alteration in the nature of the city's zoning scheme. And this is a factual issue, and the jury concluded as it did with regard to that, and that can't be reversed except for clear error. And so in this case, the question of sort of what is the core fundamental aspect of these codes, and the distance requirement is really the core of both this code and really what zoning is about generally, which is where can you conduct certain activities and how do you have a general plan for your city. And in this case, to waive the requirement, the distance requirement, would amount to undermining the whole point of this particular ordinance, I would say, particularly in this setting where I believe the record showed that there are four other homes within that 650-foot radius of Ohio House. So we're not just talking about one. There's a lot. And that was the impetus for this particular legislation and regulation, which was, hey, we've had several living homes. We've always had several living homes. That's fine. But now we have a whole lot of sober living homes, and not only a whole lot, but we have them all. We have a lot of clusters of them, and, many on a street, five on a seven-building street. And we need to be able to manage that. We need to be able to balance all of the interests, and the city, in fact, did that when it was implementing these. What is the distance requirement? What should it be? How do we implement this? And that is what the city did. And so it's really, it would undermine that in the entire
Council, Judge Gould, if I could ask you.
Sure, Judge.
So I thought the requested accommodation was not to totally eliminate the distance requirement, but to make the requirement of distance some amount of feet less than what the code now said. Is that right?
Well, that's right. They wanted to have it accommodate to what in fact is the physical reality of their setting, right?
So right. Why would that hamper the interests of the city and their zoning residents?
The jury concluded that this would be a fundamental alteration of the zoning code, and
let's say that I thought the jury's statement on its face alone would be a clear error. So I guess my question is, what are the fundamental reasons why the city would oppose the accommodation?
Yeah, so the city deliberated quite a bit in selecting the distance, the 650-foot distance requirement, and in fact looked to many other codes and legislation, including the state's legislation about residential, more institutionalized drug rehab centers, which have a 1,000-foot distance requirement, and balanced that and said, hey, you know what, in Costa Mesa specifically, 650 feet, it would be about one per block, and
And that seems to be a fair balance to us between having people here and having these, having the homes here and having the residents here with, you know, without having them overpopulate particular streets. And the reason there there was concern about the overpopulation of sober living homes in certain areas and concentration is in part because that's also not good for the residents there and not what the residents had bargained for in being in sober living homes. They're meant to be a transition from institutionalized settings to integrating into taking, you know, responsibility and moving forward with their lives. And if you had a number of these all together, then you would lose that experience, which is supposed to be the purpose of the sober living homes themselves. And so all of that was tied up into that decision making. So if you start to chip away at that repeatedly, then you're going to undermine the whole fundamental focus of this particular ordinance and really the fundamental purpose of zoning generally with regard to having buildings in particular places to keep, you know, to keep order and balance the interests of all of the different residents in the city.
Thank you, Council.
So I have a sort of a separate question regarding the reasonable accommodation claim. Ohio House has pointed out that there's a provision of the city's reasonable accommodation ordinance that may be inconsistent with the Fair Housing Act, and that is that in assessing one of these accommodation requests, you look at whether there are other facilities available in the space, and maybe the Fair Housing Act doesn't allow that consideration. What I'm trying to figure out is, my understanding is that the reasonable accommodation claim is an as-applied claim, if you will, in the sense of we asked for this and you didn't give us that, and so we're challenging. Is there also a facial challenge related to that claim? How do we think about that challenge to the procedure itself as opposed to the decision?
Yeah, that's an interesting distinction. I mean, I think that that stems from, in part, from how you interpret whether, I think as Ohio House would say, you have a particular person has sort of a right to be at a particular address. You know, I want to be in this particular place. And so if there's some other place within the city where I could be, my friend on the other side of the aisle would say that's not enough. That's insufficient. And so from that interpretation,
well, there's Fair Housing Act authority that says that, right? That in, at least in other contexts, when you're talking about at an individual level as opposed to a sort of operator level, which is what this case is about, that isn't a proper factor because it undermines the goals of the Fair Housing Act.
So the question would be, if that is a stated purpose or a stated reason for the accommodation decision, how do you look at that if that's part of the stated decision? I mean, there are a lot of other reasons beyond that.
If we were to conclude that factor is not valid, what do we do with that?
Yeah, so I think that there are factors independent of that would support the reasonable accommodation decision, so I don't think that is fatal to the decision. Okay. Yeah. So those were the two main points I wanted to cover, and my time is ending anyway. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer, but otherwise, submit.
Yeah, I have no questions.
Yeah, Judge. I think he said he has no questions.
Oh, no questions? Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
The court inquired about the administrative record and whether or not boarding houses existed. As set forth in the record, and we can provide citations to it, the only employee who testified was the new employee, Ms. Lee, that she was aware of some boarding houses. In fact, she also said no boarding house had ever applied for a CUP. Every other employee, including 30-year employees who were zoning administrators, said they don't exist. Second, regarding the mixing of the uses, boarding house and and group home. It was never the case that that appears in any of the records. If you look at the way the city published what its FAQ was regarding house regarding group homes, you'll find that at ER 5575. It doesn't make any mention that they could be boarding houses. When they apply the reasonable accommodation rules, if you're a boarding house, if you can't get an accommodation, they're supposed to provide you alternatives. Nobody says, well, why don't you think about being a boarding house? Most importantly, over and over again, the city says in each of these resolutions and planning reports, specifically, boarding houses, group homes are not boarding houses. Over and over again, it makes that statement. It also makes it in a statement to HUD. HUD, in getting its money from HUD, requires that it certifies whether or not it conflates these uses and doesn't treat them separately. And they say it's in the record. We'll provide it to the court that we have separate definitions for those. I would say this, though, about the facial versus the as-applied. The issue here in terms of the 650 feet was the city admitted we make no exceptions to that, and that's a violation of reasonable accommodation. As for the unlawful provisions that appear in the reasonable accommodation order, I would say that, one, they are facially invalid. We argued that. But also, they were cited by the city as part of the basis for why they denied the application for reasonable accommodation by Ohio House. The last thing I would like to say is this. When we talk about recall that these are retroactively applied regulations that are applied to existing homes. And as a consequence of that, all but two of them are either withdrawn or deemed to be now, or denied and deemed now to be prohibited uses. How can it be that a ordinance is deemed to be beneficial to a group of people? And this being a very unique situation where we don't have to look at boarding houses at all. Rather, let's look at the perfect application of, we have 26 people before the treatment called 323 is applied.
Let you go over a minute.
All right.
Judge Gould, do you have any final questions?
I have no further questions.
I want to thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments and helpful arguments in this case. That concludes our argument calendar for the morning, and we are adjourned for the week.